Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and this show is sponsored by Moda Fabrics, where you can visit them at the Moda Bake Shop and get all kinds of good info. So we have three guests, and I am just so excited because Leah Day is back. She's been on every month with us to chat about free motion quilting. So this is our last installment of Leah Free Motion Quilting Day. So I'm excited. Leah, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Pat. This has been a great year.
It's so much fun to have explored sort of like, you know, really in depth free motion quilting. And, you know, you and I thought, I think you actually came up with the idea. Why don't we ask what the most important things are that people still want to know? And so we accumulated a list. Why don't I just sort of, we have like kind of categories. So we'll just dive right in and get to these questions. We have something on batting. Dale asked if, you know, how do we choose batting? Leah, why don't you take that one?
Sure. It depends on what you're wanting your end result to look like. What do you want your quilt to look like at the end? So if you're wanting a soft, cuddly finish, like a kind of an antique look, kind of crinkly and wrinkly and really snuggly, then you're going to want to go with 100% cotton batting. That's going to shrink ever so slightly after you finish quilting it. It's going to have that nice finish. It's going to be very soft and cuddly. No matter how densely you quilt cotton, it's always going to soften. Now, if you want something flat that's going to hang well, that is going to go up on a wall and it is going to look like a piece of art, you're going to want to go with poly batting. Go with 100% polyester. And, you know, my favorite batting across the board is always Quilter's Dream. I love their battings. No matter what I'm looking for, I always go to them first. And I think they're great. So,
cotton. Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry?
Go ahead.
the Quilter's Dream cotton, usually in the select thickness, and then I'll usually go with the Quilter's Dream poly in the select if I'm doing a wall hanging, something along those lines.
Now, you know, I think that's great advice. And do you have something on your website, Leah, about that?
About batting specifically? I'm sure I've got a post up somewhere.
Okay. Well, they can go do a search out there. So let's talk about the biggest hurdle, and I think part of it's mental. I don't know how you feel about it, but it's getting, Michelle wants to know, how do you get like that big quilt into that little hole on your home sewing machine? And I find that a lot of times it's a mental game because you're not sticking the whole quilt in there. You're only sticking maybe a little past center because you don't, you know, to do the middle is the hardest part, but you don't need to put the entire quilt in there. I like to scrunch. What do you like to do, Leah?
Scrunching is it. Yeah, absolutely. You get to that center and you just kind of scrunch up. You've only got basically from the center to the right-hand side in the machine. You have a quarter, you know, half of the quilt in the machine at any given time. Even if you're dealing with a king size quilt, it's not that much. I think a lot of times we psych ourselves out a little bit with this. We make it a little harder than what it seems. We think about it too much. Mm-hmm. One thing I do, particularly when working on show quilts where I'm quilting very, very densely, and dense quilts, stiff quilts are even harder to move than bed quilts because they're stiff and that stiffness makes them kind of stay still. And so one thing I do, I have attached hooks to my ceiling, bungee cords and clamps, and I clamp my quilt up literally like a hammock so it's suspended behind my machine. Now, you have to adjust this every once in a while. You know, every about 4 inches or stuff, you have to kind of clamp and reclamp, but it absolutely works, and you can quilt through anything. Just kind of lift it up and get that drag and that weight of the quilt up off the table.
Yeah, the weight is your enemy. You don't want it pulling. You don't want it falling off your table. So that's really, I haven't gone that far yet, Leah, but I don't do the same type of quilting you do where it doesn't move. Mine is much more open. So that's a huge difference in just thinking about your work. The next question Tanya sent, which I think is really interesting, is, you know, what is your personal method for stopping and starting your stitching? You know, do you tie a knot? Do you bury it? Do you stitch in place? What do you like to do?
I tie a knot and bury it with a cheater needle, which is a self-threading needle. It's a lot faster to thread, and so it's much easier to kind of send it through the quilt and get it done quicker. You know, that's the way I learned to do it. It's a show quilting method. You know, it's a kind of a competition method where you don't want those starts and stops to be obvious. You want them to be hidden. You want them to be disappear, basically. You don't want them anyone to ever see it or feel it. I don't like building up thread to start. I don't like clipping off the threads or anything like that because I find it to just simply come undone. I don't feel like it's secure. And, you know, I have quilts from my grandmothers and my great-grandmothers, and they are still usable because they tied and buried their threads. They were hand quilters, but they did bother to tie and bury. And so I take that from hand quilting. I think it's the right way to do it.
And I do tend to do a lot of few stitches in place because many of my pieces don't get used, really, except for wall hangings or as table runners. They're not pieces that'll be washed and cuddled and put on the bed. For those, then I would think about it in different ways. But, you know, quick projects that are just for walls and not for competition. You totally don't want to do it for competition, but a few stitches in place and then off I go. So ergonomics, huge, huge thing for quilting. Linda said, do we have any guidelines on how to keep from getting all, you know, like she scrunches up. She says she sits down. She knows she's not supposed to scrunch up, but how do you handle that?
I really think that the key to that is your chair. I went on eBay back in, this was like 2005, and I found myself a doctor's chair, like a stool for doctors, like dentists. Mm-hmm. And you can still find them. Just go to eBay and search doctor's chair. And this is a stool. It doesn't have a back to it. It will drop down lower than the typical office chair, and it will also raise higher than the typical office chair. And I think the key to all of that, to posture everything, is having your chair at the right height. And so if your machine is not dropped down into a table, and so it's up already 4 inches kind of higher than the table, you need to be up higher than you're used to sitting in a typical chair. You need to be higher than usual. If your machine is dropped down into a table, into a drop flatbed sewing table, then chances are for free motion quilting, you're still going to want to be a little higher than usual, just simply so you have that reach and that movement without your shoulders kind of getting up around your ears. You know what I mean? So I think the chair is key. And I look for a good doctor's chair. They're not expensive. They're like $50. Get on eBay, you know, do a search.
I've never thought of those. I'm going to have to look now. You know, now there'll be no doctor's chairs on eBay after this show. They'll all be gone. Okay. So our next topic, which I want to get in because this is where the bulk of the questions came, and they came from Barbara and Deb and Shirley and Sharon and Delia and Jean and Kay. It's all about tension. Why do I have tension problems? How do I fix tension problems? Leah, we talked in advance. You know, maybe you can just give us a little overview because I imagine that your online workshops have a lot of information about this. But can you give us a little overview on how to solve tension problems?
Sure. Well, the number one thing is to figure out if it really is a tension problem. That means you start free motion quilting and you see something that looks like a tension problem. You see loops on the front or the back of your quilt and you play with that tension knob. You turn it up, you turn it down, you're trying to fix it and nothing happens. It doesn't fix it. Well, chances are that is not actually tension issues. Chances are that is a speed movement issue. So I find a lot of quilters complaining about tension. I know it's the number one question. I hear you, Pat. I hear all of those quilters that are asking this question. But I bet you anything, it is not tension at all. It is speed movement. So if you see those loops, pay attention to where they're appearing. Are they appearing always in the same kind of general curve? or direction that you're quilting. You know, take a look, really analyze what you're quilting and take a look at it. If it is, that means your hands are moving kind of slightly faster in those areas. They're just happy. They're happy hands. You need to put your foot down in those areas. You need to speed up your machine and keep that balance of speed and movement. And that tension issue, it looks like a tension issue, those loops are going to disappear immediately. It is a speed movement issue, I promise.
And also, if you, when I used to have a sit-down long arm called George, I had that because the machine ran so much faster than a domestic machine. You had to learn to get in sync differently, even though I was quilting with pushing the fabric, and it was the curves. It was always the curves. You know, you had to get more in sync. Well, let's get a couple more of these in. Designing, what to design on there? There's a couple questions from Mary and Betty and Claudia and Arlene and Janet. But let me first do, Claudia said, you know, how can you handle different densities of quilting on the same quilt and have it come out flat? Is it even possible, I'm wondering?
Well, it really depends on how you know, different, how much contrast you're going for. The quilt that's coming to my mind that I messed up on was a quilt called Life and Fire. You can Google it, you can find it, you can see what happened to it. Basically, I densely stippled the center section of this quilt. And then on the outside edges, the whole background, I quilted lines 4 inches apart. So if you're doing something this radical, so stippling like a quarter inch apart and then quilting lines 4 inches apart, you're going to have some issues. And that was a wall hanging, so it's never hung well. It's always hung with a ripple on the bottom. Now, if you've got a bed quilt, does it matter? Absolutely not. You can have areas of density. And I'm talking, you know, 4 inches, 6 inches of density in the rest of the quilt, you know, in sections. Like, let's say you have blocks and you want to have something densely quilted in the center of every block. That's fine. That's going to look fine. You're going to kind of spread it out over the whole quilt. But it's whenever you get in trouble, whenever you take and you stitch like a dense section right through the center of it, which is what I did with my quilt, and then you don't balance it out with the edges. So kind of keep that in mind. Balance is key, but
balance
don't feel like you
key.
Can't have a section of denser than less dense, I guess you
could
say.
Well, Leah, I want to say thank you for coming on every month and helping us out. This has been awesome.
Awesome. Thanks, Pat. I really enjoyed it.
Everybody can visit Leah at leahday.com, and she has online workshops with Craftsy, so you can find all the links at leahday.com where you can get more information from her in her workshops, and be sure to say hello to her when you see her on the internet. We'll be right back after the break.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To store a matching spool and bobbin together, thread both onto a long pipe cleaner and twist the pipe cleaner ends together.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I just adored having Leah Day on each month for the year. It was just so much fun to be able to talk about one topic at each time, get into it in so much great detail. So be sure to go back and listen every month. You can go into allpeoplequilt.com to the podcast page or to my Creative Talk Network, and you can take a listen. So one of the best parts about hosting the show is that I'm able to invite on people whose work that I admire. It's like one of the little perks of the job. And I got hold of Jennifer Sampo Hensley, who is a fabric artist. And you might see all of her work under Jennifer Sampo. She does work with fabric with Robert Kaufman. It's just, I just love her fabric. I have loved it for years and years and years. And she was the art director at PNB Textiles when I first signed on to do my first fabric line. And we're pretty sure, at least I can remember, that one of the pieces of my fabric line was some of the artwork that she had created, some of the collections that, you know, the company used to put into different people's things. So it's just always been my dream to be able to have Jennifer come on and share. And I got to see her just a couple of weeks ago, meet her in person, so all is good. And she is here. Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Hi, Pat. Thank you for inviting me.
This is so much fun. It's probably more fun for me.
No, I'm excited, very excited. Okay. This is a special opportunity for me.
Well, you know, let's first tell people a little bit about your background, because you told me you grew up in a super creative home.
Yes. I'm originally from Boston, and both my mom and dad were very creative. My dad held a daytime, full-time job, and he's an MIT graduate and really smart guy in the workplace, but he always had a passion for creating things with his hands after work and on the weekends. And he was in his leather shop often. I mean, I remember growing up and always smelling that great smell of fresh leather, and him working in the downstairs, pounding on it and getting ready for our Sherbourne Craft Fair that happened every summer. And I'd be there side by side with the burning tools and the stamping tools, creating with him, making sandals, bags, belts. You know, it was the 70s. So
yeah.
He was fully embracing that. Yeah. And my mom, she was always on a shoestring. So, you know, I'm the youngest of five kids. And, you know, necessity is the mother of creativity. And she would bring me to the secondhand shop in Framingham. And I remember her spending hours there. And I would go hide behind all of the old beds and the tables and the chairs, and she'd finally select something, like an old wingback chair that needed to be reupholstered, and she would make it into a beautiful antique. And she was incredible. She still is incredible.
Yeah.
So, well, yeah, you know, very creative brothers and sisters, too.
So you have all of this that was like part of just your everyday life. You know, I didn't have that. I didn't have a creative parents or siblings in that way. So when you when you decided to go to school, did you know you wanted to go for something that was artistic, or did your parents sort of help you decide that? How'd that work?
I just knew it from when I was a child, and my connection to nature and I have just such vivid memories of seeing nature and of painting and of creating that there really wasn't a question for me. I mean, I had a quick stint because I liked, you know, poli sci, and I had a great teacher. I'm like, well, maybe I'll be a political scientist. But that was fleeting. I knew very young, between the sewing and the creating and the painting, that I would go ahead and pursue a creative career.
So what was your first job out of college that was in creative work?
My first real job was PNB Textiles. It was PNB Textiles. I was 23. I was 23 or 22. And I had left Boston, and this is after having a strong background in textiles, textile technology, textile design from Fashion Institute of Technology. I had a summer job at Laura Ashley in Wales, but when I came back, you know, from all the education and the traveling, and when I wanted to get a real job, I went out west, and it was with PNB Textiles. I mean, they hired me wet behind the ears, still wet behind the ears, young.
Oh, that is so
a long time ago.
Realize. Oh, I didn't realize that part. So you really like travel, you told me, and you can see it in your photography that you do for your blog and your website, and just, you know, your life in general, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. But what does travel and creativity, how does that mesh for you personally?
So they definitely go hand in hand. I can't have one without the other. Like, I can't design from a vacuum, and travel fills up my cup. It's the way that I reach outwardly, and it's the way I get inspired. It's the way I get my adrenaline pumping. It's the way that I soak up the world, whether it's traveling to Africa or whether it's going to Japan, or my local Museum of Modern Art in San Francisco is phenomenal for inspiration. So I definitely grasp, I would say 90% of my inspiration comes from going out into the world.
And when you went to PNB, part of your job enabled you to travel so that you could either go to the textile plants or just absorb what the world was doing, right?
Yes. So PNB, I mean, Irwin Baer, I was his first creative director he ever hired. So we were both kind of new at this, and he put tremendous amount of faith in me. I know you have really, had a relationship with Irwin, and he is he was a very special man and quite a contributor to our industry, a great person, like another voice of quilting. But I would go to Paris and shop the flea markets. I would go to the trend shows in Paris, in Germany. I travel to Australia and visit shops all up and down the coast. And I also got my diving license in the Whitsunday Islands. So when I would dive, I'd see all this gorgeous color. And so then I want to do a line based on, tropical fish. I definitely have a lot of wanderlust. And the business, traveling for PNB and for my job is great. It's really great. I feel very lucky.
You told me a little story about, which I just think is so dear, and so I have to let you share it, how you met your husband, because he is also in the business, and you met him at a trade show?
Yes. So this has got to be one of the best days of my life. And not many people know this. It's kind of funny. Like, they don't know I'm married to Todd Hensley, who is the owner of C&D Publishing with his brother. So I was like 3 years into the industry, and we were at an American Home Sewing Show in Las Vegas, and we're at Bally's. And it must have been the first day opening of the show. And end of the day, and everyone's exhausted, and we're all traipsing back to the elevators, all us quilters. And I get into the elevator, and it's jam-packed. And I look across, and I just see this beautiful man with a big smile, and he's wearing an American Home Sewing Show badge. So the rest is history, but, I knew his mother before I knew him. I didn't even know he existed. His mom, who owns the Cotton Patch in Lafayette, California, she's been in the business for 35 years and the founder of C&D Publishing. I'm up to it in my eyeballs.
Yes, all around you. It surrounds you everywhere.
Yeah.
Just love that story. It's probably fairly unique to the quilt industry.
Yeah.
So it's at one point you went and started your own studio. You left to pursue, creating your own business as a designer called Studio Sampo. What was the name? I'm sorry, I messed it up.
Sampo. It's okay. It's Studio Sampo. But that's okay.
So go ahead and tell us what that studio was about. We have about 2 minutes till the break.
Okay. So I created my own business because ultimately I wanted to be my own boss. And I had been commuting. It was after I got married to Todd. I had been commuting a long distance. And as a creative, like, we don't like to spend long time commuting in cars. It ran me down. And I wanted to start a family. And I wanted to be in control of my career. And I was ripe for starting my own business. And I had a lot of energy. And I wanted to raise my child at home with a business at home. So that was really the impetus. And that started in 1996.
I can remember that. There must have been one of the like an article somewhere where they showed your studio. Do you remember?
Yeah, it could have been with either. Yeah, it was either Quilters Newsletter, or it might have been American Patchwork and Quilting. I mean, I've been through, you know, it's been so many years. I've had a lot of different coverage in different magazines and different venues. Alex Anderson or. Yeah.
We were all coveting your studio when we saw it in print. We're like, oh, my gosh. Because, you know,
a lot of light. I had a lot of light.
Yeah, so we didn't get a peek into people's lives as easily into, you know,
isn't
your work
true?
Areas.
Mm-hmm.
Do you still work at home, or do you now have something off-site?
No, you know what? I am one who likes to get up in the middle of the night. I mean, I can get my best creative work done at like 2 or 3 a.m. So even though I was like, oh, it'd be nice to have a studio in Oakland or Berkeley, really it's at home because I can go to it any time. And I love it. So it's not like a burden to have my work in my living place.
Yeah. Do you have it like separated by like doors you can close it off or?
Not yet. I mean, there's still kids, you know, running through the studio or my dog.
Yeah.
Yeah, not yet, you know, because we've moved since my old studio. My old studio was really the bomb. Yeah.
I know. Well, my studio is like right off the kitchen and you go to the deck through it. So it's actually the family room of the house. You know, there's a fireplace
right.
in here, you know, so mine. Yeah, I totally get
oh, nice.
It. It's just right in the middle.
Yeah.
Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to take a little break. And when
okay.
we come back, I want you to tell me a little bit about how you design fabrics. And then we want to talk a little bit about your trip to your very long trip to Mexico, where you lived for a few years. So we're going to be back
yes.
with American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching. Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Babylock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I'm talking to Jennifer Sampu Hensley. So, Jennifer, you are now with Robert Kaufman. What is your process for designing fabrics?
Okay, so you have this question for me, and I have to laugh because I have so many processes, and I feel kind of like Bubba, you know, in Forrest
yes.
Gump when he says how many ways you can prepare shrimp.
Yes.
You can cook it, you can boil it, you can barbecue it. So I have many, many ways that I approach a fabric line. But for instance, Studio Stash, which is a recent line that I came out with, my love affair with refined basics has been a consistent theme that I've done years and years. And when it comes to developing this type of collection, it's about making the range of value, of hue, of intensity, and of scale all work harmoniously together. Because what I'm doing and what I've always done and what I am passionate about doing is giving paint to the quilters. I mean,
I love it. I mean, I think the favorite thing about being a fabric designer is it's not done with me. The process isn't done. Mm-hmm. So if I can put a collection out there that people gravitate towards and they say, oh, my God, the depth of the purples, there's 15 purples mm-hmm. in this circular design, mm-hmm. or this light kind of vintage stitch Kantha style design is so subtle and it's so beautiful, it inspires them to buy it and then to continue to become happy and create, and the process continues. So for that particular line, it's about capturing all the subtleties that mm-hmm. a painter would use when mixing paints and designing, you know, doing a landscape. It's the light. It's capturing light. And so many quilters do that even though they don't always necessarily know that they're doing that. Does that make sense?
Yes, and it's just gorgeous. When you look at the studio stash, I mean, you can just see each of the, like you said, the shades and the depths of the color. It's gorgeous. And you personally don't have just one style. Like some of us work, you know, in sort of one style. But you have an enormous range of styles.
Yes, yes. I have an enormous range. It used to bother me, frankly, because I was like, I couldn't be, when I first started, I was like, God, I'm all over the board. When is my true style going to bloom? And I'm on almost 20 years. So the way I look at it now, because, you know, as we age, we mm-hmm. have a certain wisdom that comes with that. And I know my motto is don't box me in. And the mm-hmm. other idea is that after doing thousands and thousands of prints, I have this mosaic of ideas, of graphic mm-hmm. images, of soft painterly florals, of, you know, very detailed basics, and of children's, of novelties. So, you know, if you were to spiral that around, you end up getting a full page of a lot of variety that, in the end, I think really works all together.
Yeah, I recognize the painterly part of your work. That's always mm-hmm. something, and I'm sure there are pieces you've done over all those years that aren't that way, but that seems to be an undercurrent or a theme mm-hmm. of what, you know,
texture.
At least it's the ones that I can sort of say, oh, yeah, that's a Jennifer Sampoo type,
yes.
you know, fabric.
Yeah.
So you have a giveaway. We'll tell them on the radio, even though this is recorded and you have to be in this week. But if you go to Jennifer's site, Jennifer Sampoo, SAMPOU.com, go to her blog and follow the directions, you can be in the running to win some of her absolutely gorgeous, gorgeous fabric. Fun. That is fun. So tell
Thank
me,
you.
I want to talk a little bit, because we have about 10 minutes, I want to talk a little bit about your life in Mexico when you and your family relocated there to live for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
I've lived in other countries as a child, and so mm-hmm. I just found it incredibly interesting. What did it do for you as an artist going to live there with your family and sort of disconnect from your life you knew before?
So that's a really good question. And it was multiple reasons why we went. But personally, you know, I'm going to just talk about what's personal today,
mm-hmm.
is
right.
that I needed the break. I needed the quiet time to not have to produce. You know, if you look back on my career, I was producing and producing and producing, and I loved it, and I was mm-hmm. also raising a family, and all of a sudden I had three children, and I was continuing to produce, and you have all of this exterior stimulation. And as an artist, it's crucial that we take care of our inner life and our inner thoughts and our inner creativity. So if you're always inhaling, you're going to explode, right?
Right.
So we have to learn how to exhale. We have to learn how to not have to produce. And this was a gift. It was a total gift to be able to unplug and move to Mexico where I didn't have all these obligations of a to-do list.
Mm-hmm.
And as an artist, it completely changed me. I watched, I listened, I didn't do any painting for the first year, and I actually had taken time off of painting prior to that because I took a break from my career before that. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I started doing the second year of just learning the language, and then I was taking classes in sculpture, and I was taking classes in encaustic painting, which is painting with hot wax, and just the whole experience of painting with hot wax. You smell the beeswax, you have a torch in your right hand with a flame, and then you've got, you know, your paintbrushes, and it's such a different way to approach expression and color than I was used to. So, yeah, it gave me new legs. It gave me, it improved me for sure as an artist and as a human being.
You know, I think, Jennifer, it's really like a super important message for just anybody to hear, because I think a lot of quilters, it's their hobby. And so, you know, they're like your dad. They go to their day job, they come home and they tool leather, they come home and make quilts. But sometimes you need a break, you know, even from your hobby.
Yes. And, you know, like, you have a little inner voice and you just have to listen to it. But when something becomes frustrating, or when your neck starts aching because you're at the sewing machine and your shoulders are hunched, your body's telling you something. So I'm a big believer. I'm a yogi, and I do a lot of breathing and yoga, and it's listening to your body and what you need to be balanced and to be happy. So I think taking breaks or trying something different,
right?
It's okay. Like, give yourself permission to also just not do anything.
Yeah, I think that's so interesting. You know, this is sort of my second career. I didn't, you know, I sort of, you know, came from a whole different, you know, business world first, different kind of work. And so I think sometimes I know I can feel that too. It's like, oh, I just need a break. I don't feel like I want to make obsessively. I want to, you know, do something else. But then you come back. When did you know, like, that point, Jennifer, when you just said, okay, I'm ready?
Yes, it was in Mexico, and I did a little blog post about it, and it was about, it's a metaphor, and I love metaphors, but it's about the boomerang. You chuck the boomerang, and it eventually comes back, and my boomerang is textile design. And it did. It kind of hit me over the head with the encaustic work, and I'm like, I'm going to give Kaufman a call and tell him I'm ready. Because the texture and the color, I'm like, this would look awesome on fabric. And it's totally different than anything I've ever done. And what I had seen them in, you know, I don't know if there's any other artist out in our industry that has done work based on encaustic.
For fabric, yeah, I have no idea. Doing it with the mixed media, but then taking that and making it look like that on fabric. How fascinating.
Yeah, well, Japan does the best, you know.
Yeah.
Most of my stuff is printed in Japan, and wow, they're impressive with their technique.
It is just gorgeous. So you decided, okay, so you sort of got this, like, I'm ready. And then did you actually work from Mexico on the first few lines until your family decided it was time to relocate again?
Right. So, and also Todd was running the business from afar. Thank God for Skype. Thank God for FedEx. I mean, we couldn't have done this without Skype. That's the other thing. I mean, to see how people can work from almost anywhere in the world now is pretty fabulous. And after 2 years of living in Mexico, I mean, I could have stayed a whole lot longer, but I also, our children were fluent in Spanish. They had this richness in their life of such a different culture that values completely different things than we do. And they learned that, and they ingested it, and it changed all of us. And you know, the other side is, wow, the States has a really good educational system, and the States has really well-organized, you know, sports and events and, you know, extracurricular activities. So, you know, as a parent, you want your child to be as well-rounded as you can possibly make them. Mm-hmm. So it was time to come back, and my heart will always be partly in San Miguel de Allende, and we know we'll at some point, you know, be going back. It's a pretty special place.
Fantastic. Yeah, your kids will want to go too, because I lived in Europe and I've gone back, and it's just fascinating to go see it as an adult. So where you spent time as a kid in another country. So we're getting towards the end here. You are back. You are back. You're designing. How many lines a year are you designing now?
So now it's about three. It's about three lines. So about 75 prints a year. Which is manageable. That's good. I can do that. And I'm getting into quilting and designing quilts. And so there's a whole new resurgence in the whole social media. So that's fun. That's awesome because I can directly be in touch with the consumer or the quilter or the sewist.
Right.
It's great.
And we've been Instagramming you and I. So it's like,
thank you. Awesome.
I love it. I love it. And your quilt, just tell us just real briefly, you gave me a link, which I have on my blog, for Shay's zigzag quilt. How did that come about?
So that is for my dear little friend, Shay, who is my best friend's daughter. And my best friend lives close to me, and we're the ones who drove out to California together 22 years ago.
Oh, wow.
So Shay is 10. I know, it's such a great story, and I won't go through it because it's on my blog, but Shay is this darling little nature girl who loves all colors of nature, blue, greens, and so the challenge was to use the studio stash, and she didn't like pink, no pink.
Oh, okay.
So there's a little corner of pink on the end of the quilt, and you just got to go read the blog to find out why.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
it's a great story, and you have beautiful photos. Are you doing all the photography that, like, for your line and for your blog? Is that your photography?
So yes. It's fun. I mean, I can't imagine. It's amazing what I can do with my iPhone, and then I'll throw it into Photoshop. And if I have to blur, like, the background, it's super fun. Like, things by accident happen. I'm like, oh, I kind of like that, or the filters. But it's fun.
Jennifer, this has been so fantastic. I'm so glad that we got to talk a few weeks ago at the trade show, and then I'm so glad you're on the show today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Pat. I'm so grateful that you had me on. It's been a pleasure.
Everybody needs to visit Jennifer at jennifersampou.com and go to her blog, check out all her things, some free stuff there. Then we're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back with American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and when we come back, we are going to be talking with Roseanne Kermes about quick projects, things that you can do for yourself or gifts.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I have Roseanne Kermes of Rosebud's Cottage back. Yay! Roseanne and I are going to talk girlfriend style. Yes! We're going to talk about little projects. Hi, Roseanne.
How are you doing today?
I am good.
I've been on coffee. Well, I don't have that problem. But I think I've had a little too much Pinterest. As I was waiting for the show and listening to Jennifer and stuff, I was on Pinterest, and somebody at American Patchwork and Quilting was busy pinning holiday projects. So they must be in the same mode as we are. What are we going to make for the holidays?
Yes, fast, easy, little holiday projects.
One of the great things about being a shop owner right now is it's just a great time of year because I get to not only help people find projects to make and help them pick out their stuff that they're going to, you know, like the fabric and the supplies and stuff, I also get to keep a lot of secrets. So that's very fun to be in that kind of situation already this year. So
what should we talk about first? I know that All People Quilt, out on their website, they have a holiday quilts, a slideshow. If you just put in no sew fall or holiday quilts, you'll get the slideshow. There are some really cute things on here. We were taking a look at it earlier. Which is your favorite?
I think my favorite one is probably the braided candle holder. And on that one, it's just fabric that's braided together, and you don't need to have your sewing machine. So if you needed some kind of last-minute decoration on your table, you just braid the fabric together and whip-stitch it together around the end of your candle, like a pillar candle. And it just mm-hmm. makes a nice thing and be a perfect hostess gift, something to take to your friends for a party or to use as neighbors, too, if you're having a party at your house.
I like that because you could take any kind of color. You know, that could be for anything. Just the fabric is going to make what it's all about.
Yeah, and it was under the
They had. Did you see the napkins? I liked the ones with the napkins that had. They're just. You know, what is that like? Different ribbons and felts that are stripped and then tied, and they're so cute.
Yeah, and they had napkin rings on there too on that page as well. That was the No Sew Fall tabletop decor slideshow. They had just a lot of things that you could use for any season, easy to make, and you know not very stressful. Those napkins are a great gift too to give to your friends and stuff. So are tree skirts. I had a friend who did this. They had a family tree skirt. She did it the year her first child got married, and she made a new tree skirt that year, and they put everybody's hands, she appliqued them onto the tree skirt, and then as her family expanded with more, you know, son and daughter-in-laws and grandchildren and stuff, they just kept adding handprints to the tree skirt, and they'd embroider the year that the hand was added, and it was just, it's very, very sweet to go to her house and see that. And to remember her family, you know, as young and also all these little grandkids around now.
That's so sweet. I saw one on Pinterest.
Kind of stuff,
speaking, they had the one with the handprints that you could take just like muslin or, you know, something, maybe a natural color, and then just ink up the hands or paint with paint and make the handprints that way and then put the year on the tree skirt.
That's cute too, and if you wanted to add some special touches to it too, you could embroider around the hands too with like a running stitch or a back stitch or something just to give it a little more texture. I think anything that you can do to record a memory like that is really important because that's pretty much what Christmas and the holidays are about is family, don't you think?
I do, and I would just love to be able now to pull out a tree skirt that had people's hands and their dates and, you know, signatures or things. Mm-hmm. That would just be so nice. It'd be just such an heirloom piece to pass down. Very, very fun. So we have some other little projects on my internet group. Two of the gals were doing different little projects that I thought were really clever. And then you also have one from your retreat that you just ran. Tell me about the retreat one.
The retreat one, we did vinyl-coated coasters, and We used a product from ThermoWeb that is an iron-on vinyl. And what we did is we used leftover charm squares. We cut 2 5-inch squares, one for the front, one for the back, with a piece of cotton batting in the inside. And then we pressed the iron-on vinyl to the right size of the fabric. And then just sewed around it with a half-inch seam allowance and used a scallop cutter to trim it off after we sewed it, just to even it out and stuff.
Ooh.
And they were really fast. We had one woman who did a whole charm pack from Moda.
Oh.
And she was able to make 21 coasters. She was giving them to her niece for a fundraiser.
Oh.
Just really, really fun. I put those directions on how to make them on my, my blog.
Yeah.
Because I've had a lot of people ask for directions. After, so people who weren't at the retreat wanted to know how to make them.
Right.
So
how'd they do that?
So I put that on there.
One of the things that Dixie,
you had
the
thing for the batting. Yeah, your friend Dixie had something about batting.
Right,
scraps.
Yeah.
I
Dixie was talking about this on my internet group is that she's taking scrap batting and making mitten ornaments. You know, you could make other shapes, too, out of batting.
Yeah, I've done it with snowmen. You know, we cut out a snowman shape and hand-stitch it together and just stuff it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then to glitter them up, I'm really cheap. So I use, like, really inexpensive hairspray and spray them and then put a little bit of glitter on top of them just to sparkle them. And it's like, really fun, fast. but... You know, we all have batting laying around, and, you know, why not put it to some good use like that?
It's really much more durable than we think it is sometimes. Sometimes I think, batting, it'll, like, shred or something, but it doesn't. It's pretty sturdy. You can use it as cloth for the most part.
Well, it has it's built on a scrim, so it already has, like, a base built into it. So it is, like you said, it is durable, and that's what holds it together in a quilt. But it's great for small projects like that, and very fun and very vintage looking. It has that old fashioned look to it, which is cute.
And you could tea dye the things too, the batting, you know, like if you wanted to, and then glitter it with cheap hairspray. That's
yes. And then tea dye is really easy too. You just, you know, boil up a couple bags of tea and let them cool. And I usually spray them, put them in a little spray bottle and spritz things with that. You know, just enough to give them that yellow look, but not too much of a brown look. And when you add the glitter onto it, it's very vintage looking, very 30s and 40s, kind of cute. I like that.
So you also had somebody doing banners at your retreat that sounded really cute.
Oh, these were darling. She did you've seen the triangle banners. Only her banners were a little more longer than they were wide, so they were very kind of skinny looking. And she used the Elf on the Shelf fabric for that. But what I thought was really cute is she used bias tape where she attached the triangles to bias tape. And she used a decorative stitch on her sewing machine. She did it in red and had a little snowflake design. So all along the edge of the bias tape where those triangles were fed into the hanger, it was a very cute design. And it's so clever. I would have just stitched it down with a straight stitch. Would never have thought to use my embroidery stitches on my machine. And I'm very impressed by that. I thought it was, I can't quit thinking about it. Now I want to do some, too.
Now you want to go do some, right.
She's going to, she made them for her two preschool kids, and she's going to give them to them at Thanksgiving so they can hang them up in their bedrooms for the season. I thought that was kind of a nice touch, kind of start the season off on Thanksgiving night. So that was cute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, you know, you have to start decorating the day after Thanksgiving in my family. That's when you do that. So that's perfect. I'll have to make one.
Yeah.
I saw this online at a website called abeautifulmess.com. It's one word, a beautiful mess, where they were displaying photos in ball jars. Oh, my gosh. They were so cute.
And I looked at that too. Those were cute because they just did any photo. It could be like our case. You know, we have newlyweds in our family. Wouldn't it be sweet to have the bride and groom, one of their wedding pictures, into this cute little jar and decorate the edge of the jar with some ribbons and things. But you could put anything in there. You could put a place you've been to this summer for a vacation as a little memento. But they were just you know, they were any kind of jar. But you could still see through it and see the image. That was so cute.
Yeah, I like the old canning jars. Yeah, the old canning jars I think are pretty cool.
Okay,
on my internet group, Mary Val was making her orphan blocks into pot holders. It's like, yay, how fast is that?
Yes.
With the Insulbright and just, you know, doing a little quilting on it, binding. She said she'd made 42.
Well, you said she was quilting them on her long arm, so she must have just slapped them in a row and just went over them and then cut them apart, bound them. What a great idea. Because we all have those blocks that didn't turn out.
Yeah. Why not? Why not? There was some pillows, some fun pillows that you sent me a link to. Tell me about those.
Yeah, I can't remember where I saw this. I think it was on All People Quilt. They did just, you know, rectangular or square pillows, and one of them, it was a red and white striped pillow, and they cut a big tree shape, like, you know, kind of like a triangle tree, and then they used little felt balls to decorate it. The other one was more of a square pillow, and they put strips of felt to make it look like ribbon that you had tied a package, and then they did a bow in the middle with some little bells and felt balls and stuff to look like holly. That was very quick. You know, you can get pre-made pillows and do lots of things with them if you don't have a lot of time to sew them. There's so many pre-mades that are, you know, just begging to have some added touches and some embellishments added to them. And then, you know, they're fun to make.
You know what I also thought of, Roseanne, though, looking at those, is that you could find a thrifted sweater or something and use it.
Oh, wouldn't that be cute?
Yeah, that looks like sweater.
Yeah, that would be really cute.
Yeah. Okay, so we have like 30 seconds. You have one more tip, one more idea, 30-second idea.
One of my favorite things for gifts, I get those really cheap gloves at Target, and then I will hand-cut like some holly or some flowers and stitch them onto the back of the gloves and embellish them with beads and stitching and stuff and give them to my girlfriends as gifts. And one little tip for that is if you make gloves like that, you shove a piece of cardboard in between as you're stitching. You won't have to worry about sewing the front to the back. But those are great last-minute gifts, perfect for stocking stuffers and things. You know, don't forget to treat your pets. They need treats, so we're good to go.
Fill them up with doggy treats. Okay, Roseanne, this has been wonderful. Thank you for coming on and chatting with me.
Thanks a lot, Pat. I'll talk to you again.
Okay. This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Visit us at allpeoplequilt.com. Come back next week for all new show. You can also visit me at patsloan.com and check out everything we both have to offer. See you next time.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques.